Hey everyone, this is Wes.
And it's Mitch.
And this is the Nintendo Show, the best damn Nintendo podcast on the internet. Even though we're not talking about a Nintendo game today. A game that is not on the system at all. We're talking about Elden Ring. So Mitch and I are here. Mitch is, if anyone's been listening for the 10 years we've been doing this, Mitch has showed up in some very, very old podcasts, but he's back for this one here. Because he's played a shit ton of this game, more than I have.
That's right. It's a good game. And actually, are the old Souls games, I think they are on the Switch. You can get them, right? Like they just came out with Dark Souls 3?
I think it's just Dark Souls 1. They did Dark Souls. I don't know if they added 3 to the Switch. I don't think the Switch, they would have to de-res it, probably.
Right.
Like they did The Witcher and Doom Eternal. Which,
right.
I don't know how people play Doom Eternal on the Switch. It's a big red blob of, I don't know what's happening.
Yeah. So maybe one day in 5 years they'll have Dark Souls on, or Elden Ring.
Elden Ring on the Switch, on the Switch U or
yeah.
Switch whatever, XL. I don't know.
Yeah. Switch OLED.
Mm-hmm. Well, they have an OLED.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I wonder if it could run it or if it would just be like...
Well, the OLED is the same as the regular Switch. It's just a slightly bigger with a higher screen resolution for a handheld mode. When it's on the TV, its actual capabilities are the same as the regular Switch.
Mm, so, I mean, but if it's running a higher resolution handheld, that means that its graphics card is probably a little bit higher.
That's spec, a good point. Right? I don't know. I don't know specs.
Yeah.
But that's a good thought. But we're talking about Elden Ring, which is on the other consoles.
That's right.
Which is the latest installment in the Dark Souls series. And this game's mean. I don't know who heard it.
Yeah, it definitely has its moments. And actually, the maker, I would butcher his name, so I'm just not even gonna say it.
We'll call him Frank.
Yeah, Frank. So Frank actually went on record saying that he can't help himself when it comes to the Elden Ring or Souls games, I guess, in that he will be designing areas and find himself just immediately designing like a poison area, or in Elden Ring, there's a lot of Scarlet Rot areas. So he just finds himself like immediately going towards that, and he knows how players feel about like those poison areas.
Right?
Like Blighttown.
Nobody misses Blighttown.
Yeah, nobody misses Blighttown, but there's a lot of areas like that in Elden Ring currently. So he designs those areas and enjoys designing them despite what the general populace kind of feels about them.
Yeah, I've passed over one of those areas, I believe, but I was on horseback and nothing bad happened to me, so everything was fine. I just kind of ran through it. I was like, nope, and kind of took off. But this is, we should address, this is an open world. For those of you who live under a rock and haven't taken a look at the screenshots of this thing, it is an open world, which is insane to do a Dark Souls in an open world, but it feels like it should have been this all along. It feels natural for this kind of game to do this. This is... flows so nicely. Everything is mapped out really well, and I haven't seen an open world this massive. Like, I just have a small excerpt exposed, and I accidentally glimpsed a overall map the other day, and I pooed a little. Like, it was just terrifying. I was like, oh my god, like,
it's a humongous game. Definitely a humongous game. I mean, so typical Souls games will have like one area per big boss, you know, and maybe they'll have like one or two mini bosses in there. This game has like, no kidding, like 50 big bosses. I think there's only like 20 that are part of the actual main like storyline, or rather like required bosses, but there's seriously like 50 big bosses in there that optional and required combined you have to do. And it's not limited to just like one area per boss. I mean, there's just a whole world.
I killed three bosses and did three of them. No, I killed four bosses. Three of them were in dungeons before I did my first actual story boss.
Mm-hmm.
And fuck that guy, by the way, that Margit thing. Oh my god.
Yeah.
That guy was
Margit the Ill Omen.
Yep. I think it was a perfect first boss too, because it really showed you that it told you that this game is not holding back when that's the first boss.
Right. Yeah. It's very much a welcome to Souls kind of boss. And I think that there is a lot of moments in the game, and I'm a little bit further on than you are, Wes, but I think there's a lot of moments in the game where you're exploring somewhere, right? And this game encourages a lot of exploring. Mm-hmm. And you're exploring somewhere, and you're just like, la la la, you know, going around, maybe I backstab this mob, and then all of a sudden a big health bar appears on the bottom of your screen, and you're like, oh crap. Because you just stumbled onto an optional boss, and boy, some of them, most of them, hit really hard.
Oh, I found a putrid tree thing by one of the lesser Elden trees, mm-hmm. and he literally just took a big swing and did my entire health bar, and I was just, nope, can't do this yet, and turned around and left. I mean, it's so awesome yet terrifying when you're walking around and you just see this dragon drop out of the air. I mean,
yeah, and that was my first experience in Elden Ring. Actually, I was about 3 minutes into the game. So you go through character setup. There's a cutscene after a small event, and then you're basically released into the world. You can go through a little tutorial area to learn about, you know, parrying, backstabbing, sneaking, all that good stuff.
Which is
or
cool.
You can just
which is cool that they did that. I thought that was a great little thing, because you're literally just in this room and there's a pit, and this dude goes, go down the pit, or you could just go to the left and go through these doors. And you go down the pit, it's just a little tutorial area with some regular mobs. They show you the basic commands and the basic things to do, and then you get back to that room where you go through the doors. Or if you're like a seasoned Dark Souls player and you're like, I know what I'm doing, just go through the doors and carry on with the day. This game is doing a lot of little things like that, where it's stepping away from the typical Dark Souls thing, where it's pretty much the first little area there tells you the basic buttons, but after that you're on your own. They're still doing that, but there is still a lot of like tutorial help things that pop up. Like when you grab your first plant, a little thing pops up about crafting materials and stuff, and you stop at your first bonfire, like, oh, this is the path you can see. So the game knows that it's going to be absolutely brutal, and there's going to be 1,000 things it's not going to tell you, but it's still going to tell you about these 100 or so and keep you kind of going. So it's kind of holding your hand, but it's leading you into traffic. Like, it's brutal.
Yeah, absolutely. And the leading into traffic part's exactly what that first experience was for me. So instead of going down into the pit and kind of learning about the game, I've known Souls for a while. I've played every Souls game except Bloodborne. I'm not a fan, but don't crucify me for that.
Don't worry, I will.
But yeah, if you actually head out the doors, there is a moment that you can have, and I had this about 3 minutes into the game. Like I said, you go out the doors, you drop down into a swamp area, and one of the bosses of the game drops down on your head and obliterates you. And I'm just going, that was not fair. How the heck was I supposed to even, like, think about that, right? It, like, there was no warning or whatever. I just, my health bar disappeared, and I went, oh, okay, and didn't go back to that area until I was way stronger.
I found that dragon just the other day, because I knew he existed, and I thought it was in a different part. And there's this guy, he's like, hey, don't go to that lake, there's a dragon. I'm like, oh, this is the dragon Mitch found. Avoid that. Got it. No problem. And I was in that part where you were, not realizing it was that close to the main area. And there's this little group of mobs just walking in the middle of the thing. I was like, let's go murder them. And that's when I found the dragon.
Yep.
That was mean.
Yeah, and this game is this game compared to previous Souls games is pretty heavy-handed on the dragons. You know,
yeah.
there was like, you know, 3, 4, maybe 5 in some of the previous Souls titles. But Elden Ring, I mean, there's an entire area where the only enemies in it are dragons.
Oh, God.
So you fight dragons. And I've seen further on by watching streams and stuff. I've seen further on than where I'm at. And they start doing this really interesting thing where the previous things that you would have fought as like optional bosses, right, start becoming regular mobs that you run through, and they still have like the same health pool and stuff, but since you're leveling up and scaling, it's not such a big deal anymore, but they still have all their abilities and whatnot. You're just seeing them at a later state where you're able to deal with them, and that's kind of cool to kind of have this like, okay, this is the first time you're seeing this enemy. It's technically a boss. You fight it. It's a really, really hard fight. And then, you know, in 7 more hours of playtime, you come across it as just a regular mob. Mm-hmm. And now you got to fight it. And good luck.
One of the things that I thought was, again, really mean. I feel like I've said that 20 times already. But really interesting when I stopped and thought about it was in that first area where the dragon was, off to the side, there are some broken down ruins. And now these, obviously we're discussing spoilers here. If you're listening to this podcast, we're doing spoilers, but we're just doing early game spoilers. Hopefully we're not going to drop anything huge. And trust me, I could sit here for an hour talking about this game and say everything that I've experienced. I'm still maybe going to do 5% spoilers of the mass of what this game is. But there's these ruins off to the side next to where that dragon is, and there's a little basement with some rats, and at the end of the basement there's a chest, and I found that chest. I'm like, this is cool. I found a chest, popped it open, and I was consumed by smoke and transported to an area that was far more powerful than I was at level 1. I hadn't even found where to go to unlock leveling up yet. Like, I had nothing except starting everything. And I thought about this for a while because I was like, why is this a thing? Why is this in this game like this? And I was more okay with it when I found a couple more of those. And I realized it was a way to get to another point in the map and to get things that wouldn't necessarily be accessible to you unless you trudged along the map, so you can get to it quicker. So that area I got transported to, I don't know what's there. I haven't gone back to explored it, but it's a nice thing that they, since they're going to spread all the good goodies out throughout the entire massive map, that they at least made shortcuts. So if you are replaying the game or you want to go and explore a little deeper in there, that you have an option to get across this a little bit more. And I thought that was a really interesting little, here's a helpful little thing, but first time, it's a booby trap.
yeah. I mean, that's one of the things I did want to talk about, and this kind of dovetails nicely into this kind of subject is barriers to progress, right?
Yes.
So previous Souls games, a lot of times, you wouldn't be able to progress unless you killed like one of the major bosses, right? Or had like some sort of key item or something like that to unlock a door. This one being open world, technically, aside from a very select number of locations, you can get anywhere, like right off the bat.
Yeah, you asked me the other day, how do I get to this lake and I haven't killed Godric yet? It's a small path along the castle you can go. You can just kind of skip past the castle.
Yep. So yeah. And so there's a lot of like back doors to areas and stuff like that, which I think is a good thing. It definitely encourages kind of this like exploration and you know, yeah, if you're doing a second playthrough and you know, like the item that you really want to get and work on is past a certain area or in a certain area, then you're free to just go there. Right. But I think that for a first playthrough, it's actually a little bit of a detriment, because if you have this like this open world where you can go and get whatever item, right, you have to be very, very disciplined as like a player, as somebody interested in playing the game for what it is, to not go to those higher areas just to get an item, to not look up online like where the best, you know, katana is or whatever. And if you do, then it kind of almost like artificially boosts you to where it makes the bosses and the mobs you encounter a little bit too easy at first. And a lot of people will have seen the videos of like the magic users. They get this basically Kamehameha type of beam. They go in, one shot a boss that, you know, normally takes a 5-minute fight. And then they walk out with, you know, 100,000 souls or whatever it is. So it's a good thing, right, for like a second playthrough, but I feel like for a first playthrough, unless you're being disciplined about not going to those extra areas, yeah, not having like barriers to progress really hinders like your enjoyment of the game, because you are not going to have much of a challenge, right? You're just going to walk in, one shot a boss, and walk out.
Yeah, I'm trying really hard not to slip into, like, I'm trying not to watch streams, and I'm not watching a like late game builds that people are doing. I still have no idea about 99% of the weapons that are in this game. I got no clue about them. I am looking up a couple of like early game tips here and there just to kind of get me over that initial hurdle, but I haven't found anything that I haven't found already.
Right.
Yeah, you got to be careful, because this game, exploration is a massive chunk of this game, and just stumbling across it, and the open world aspect of it, I'm going to compare it to the Breath of the Wild, because that is a big open world game. But Breath of the Wild, there was a lot of stuff to go and explore and look around. It's like, oh, what's this over here? But there wasn't a lot of stuff to get out of that. Like, you'll find like a fire sword by wandering off of this area. That's kind of cool, but they break it, everything. So it didn't have a ton of reward for exploration, although that was the game, was to go and see what's going on. This game is just littered with stuff. You're getting souls to level up, you're getting weapons, you're getting crafting materials, you're fighting bosses, you're getting talismans, and like, there's just tons of stuff. There's so much reward for exploration in this game, opposed to like Ghost of Tsushima, where exploration, oh yay, I get to do a haiku and get a headband, like that it rewards you so much to go, what's that rock? Let's see what it does.
Yeah, absolutely. No, it totally does reward you. And I think exploration is like such a big part of it. My point is that there's not a whole lot of punishment on the side of exploration.
Yeah.
If you wanted to just run by, you know, a group of mobs that are obviously meant for somebody that's level 80 and you're only level 10, and then pick up an item and run away, like you're able to do that.
Yes, and they made it really easy with the horse.
Right, they did make it really, really easy to do a lot of that with the horse, run through the higher level areas and not just get one shot and lose all your souls, runes in this case is what they're called in this game, is runes.
I still call them souls. Right. We know what you're doing. We know what they are.
Right. Yeah, so it takes a lot of like discipline to not like play the game in that way. But if you do want to play the game in that way, that's entirely up to you. It's just I don't find personally a whole lot of pleasure in like going, getting the most OP stuff and then running back and you know, being able to one shot every boss. Like, there's no challenge to that. And kind of in that thread is another thing that I kind of wanted to talk about and mention, and that's this idea of spirit summons and items helping with boss battles. So if you, again, have, like Wes said, been living under a rock, there is an option in the game to consume FP, for the most part. There are a couple of exceptions, but consume FP, which is basically your mana or your magic, to summon spirits to fight alongside you. Now, these are different than like NPC summons or player summons to help you with boss battles. They're actually just like littler mobs that you can create and upgrade, right? So The controversy around this is it kind of, along with the NPC summons, the little gold signs that you'd see a lot of, outside of a lot of boss battle doors, it kind of turns on like an easy mode for bosses. You get in there, you summon your spirits, you have your NPC summon, they're tanking all of the damage, and you can kind of like weave in and out and do do battle if you're a melee kind of character, or you can just sit back and cast spells if you're doing like sorcery or incantations, and you're never really in any danger.
As long as you don't burst too much damage. Like I found in certain things where if I do a little bit more damage than what my summons are doing, which is very easy, he will just turn at me. which is
it seems like there it seems like the aggro of the bosses isn't on a table of like who's done most damage to me. It seems to be who has damaged me recently. There's video of like there's a wolf summon you can get, right? And there's video of these wolf summons basically just sitting there bouncing the boss between the three of them, only doing like 20 damage to the boss, which is a tiny little number, right? And then the player does like 400 damage, and then the wolf does 20 damage, and it turns back to the wolf. So I think it's actually about recency of what's hit the boss rather than total damage. Yeah, so it's even more so like kind of an easy mode to not have to deal with the typical bosses very much. Now there are some exceptions obviously with bosses that have like a mass amount of AoE that'll just immediately kill off your spirit summons. And then you're kind of like up a creek because you've been not practicing dodging or anything like that up until this point. But yeah, this is a really interesting thing that there's this like quote unquote easy mode in the game, because it's not like it's an exploit. It's not like it's a cheat. It's something they put in the game to use. So for the people that are saying like, oh, the people using spirit summons are, you know, playing it on easy mode and like bullcrap, the game's balanced around using those items, right?
Yeah, I mean, Margit still took me 13 tries and I use summons every fight. I mean,
right. Yeah, exactly. Like it definitely doesn't make it just a totally like a wash, right? You can't just walk in, summon something, and then walk away. You still have to do some of the battling for the boss, at least.
It's a nice mechanic. I enjoy the summons a lot because it kind of evens the playing field in certain points. It's nice that they added something like this, like the NPC summons that you can grab outside boss doors and everything like that. I've always liked those as well because it allows those who are not diehard Souls people, who haven't played all the games, who aren't doing multiple playthroughs, who are just abusing this game to squeeze every bit out of it, is letting the little bit more casual players able to get through that wall. It allows them to have a better chance to actually getting through the game because it's a whole other level than most games. It's a different kind of beast. I really like the analogy I said off before recording, so I'm going to do it again. It's handing the guy the rock chisel to get through the prison wall so he can get down the poop chute and escape into freedom. I mean, it's that's all it is. They're not handing him the keys to the cell, but they're giving him the tools to do it themselves. So it's very
nice. And I truly think that there are times when the summons are almost damn near required. Right, there are boss battles in this game. Again, not trying my best not to spoil a bunch of the later stuff, but there are boss battles in this game where there's two or three bosses, and juggling like what each one is doing at any given time is a lot for just like one person. So you know, it's the equivalent of summoning somebody to help or a spirit to help outside of the Ornstein and Smog battle from Dark Souls
1,
Dark Souls 1. So it's the equivalent of doing that. Like, you just you don't want to have to deal with both bosses' abilities at the same time. So when it comes to like those kind of battles, I'm totally down for the summons, but I could also see on the other hand for like single battles, how it's kind of, it's a little bit cheesy, at times. But again, there's design around this, right?
Whatever I gotta do to win, I don't care. Right. This game is too mean in other areas. That's fine. Like,
right? Yeah. From Software and Bandai and Namco have put in items and things to help you with bosses. There's one particular item that people are kind of scratching their head about for a later boss, where you get this item. The boss's weapon does like additional damage to you if you get hit by it. It's kind of like a bleed, but it's like an ongoing bleed rather than just a one hit chunk. So closer to maybe like a poison. And there's this item that you can get right before the boss battle that negates basically all of it. It deflects that damage, right? So it makes the boss battle way, 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 way easier. And it is one of the hardest boss battles in the game. You know, it's kind of that, okay, I could see you wanting to challenge yourself, right? And raise the difficulty level by not using the item. But if you're just slamming your head against a wall in this very difficult boss battle, use the item. It's there. It's in the game. It's not like you're going into the code and adding yourself a billion and a half, you know, strength and you're just one-shotting the boss anyway. Yeah. You're still playing within the bounds of the game and how it was designed. You're just choosing not to torture yourself.
It's just a little less bullshit for you to deal with.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And there is a ton of bullshit in this game. There is a ton of it.
Let's talk briefly about the bosses. And
yeah,
there's been one boss that I just thought was just flat out easy. And that was this cat statue with a sword. It's in one of the very first little dungeons. And that thing was a breeze. Mm-hmm. Yep. But other than that, a lot of the bosses, pretty much all the other bosses I've come across, have been very similar. It is this thing, it's going to move very fast. It's going to attack a very wide arc. Many of them have this random scream or a pound that's going to do massive AoE damage. And these bosses, the AI is even smarter in these bosses. I've come across one where the second I go to chug a healing thing, it leads into this one move it doesn't use otherwise. Like, it has a move to deal with your healing. It comes at you harder the second you start doing something like that. And
which boss is this? No.
It was this armor knight in one of those gals or one of those.
Oh, yeah.
There was this guy with a shield with a spike on it. And the second I would start chugging, I would tumble away and start chugging my potion. The second I pull the potion out, it goes into a lunge. And it instantly gap closes on me. And it gives me so little opportunities. And that was the way that a lot of these bosses are. The Margits, the Godric that I fought, there's an assassin that I've come across. They do not give you breathing space at all. They're very in your face and with very wide arcs and very rapid. They go into one move set into another very quickly. You pretty much have a moment to tumble slash tumble. Like, it's mean. You don't have openings like in the older Dark Souls games to dodge this big move set like crazy, and then you can get like four swings in real quick. There isn't that.
Right. Right. Yeah, there's a lot of that in there in Elden Ring that it's very, 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 very punishing on you trying to do multiple things, right? And I mean that by multiple attacks, attack and then heal, like spell cast, something like that, right? So if you're trying to beat a boss and you dodge in and you do a slash, most of the time you won't be able to do a second slash. And
even then, based on the type of slash, there's not enough frames for you to roll before its attack connects.
Right. Your second attack. Right. So it punishes you very, very, very heavily for both trying to greed how many attacks you're getting in and for not dodging properly. I think it is one of the most punishing games in the Souls series with that in regards.
Oh, I think it is.
Yeah. Now, I will say they do balance that out. There are a number of bosses that, like, have these big wind-up, like, one-shot things that if you get hit by, you're done. But then after it, they have kind of a recovery time where they're trying to, like, get back up after their exertion, right? So that's where, like, bleed builds and the frostbite builds and stuff are good, but there are still a number of bosses like that assassin that the bleed builds just don't really work out very well because it takes you too long to actually build it up and their resistance just goes up.
I will mention one funny thing about the summoning that I forgot to about how easy it makes certain fights. I came across this assassin in a small dungeon. And he was jumping around and everything, and I summoned the little, the five noblemen or whatever, the five regular dudes. They look like farmers. Mm-hmm. And he does a lot of, like, attacks and then jump backs, and he dodges a lot of your attacks. It really makes you have to go to him. And he did one of these jump backs, and I am between the wall and this pedestal. And my nobleman got around him, and he couldn't get out of the corner.
Oh, so he was stuck
in the corner with the summons, and I died laughing. I put my controller down in the middle of a boss fight to laugh. Pulled out my bow and just finished him off. I'm like, yeah, that's I'm fine with this. Like, that guy was not going to be fun otherwise, but
yeah, there's actually a couple of bosses that that you can do a little bit of cheese on, and it's just using mechanics that are actually in the game. A good example is so when you do damage to a mob, so far as you don't die, that damage will stick, right? So I damage a knight in a room, I run away, so long as I don't die or rest at a fireplace, if I come back, that knight's damage will still be there, right? So there are a few bosses in the game that are like open world bosses, so they're not through a fog door. Like these two horses, these two knights on horses, for example.
Oh, there's another one. Where, oh, I hate that guy.
There's like 17.
Oh God.
Where you go through this door that's behind them, right? And there's a grace right there, and if you go up to the knights and you do some damage and then you run back to the grace, don't rest at it, but you run back to the grace, the knights will despawn and respawn back where they were, but the damage is still there, so you can just like
cheese the crap out of that guy.
You can cheese it. You can just sit there and like paper cut them down, right? And there's a number of bosses like that, and I don't necessarily like playing like that, but if there is like two of those knights on horses, dude, I was not against choosing those because that just felt unfair. I couldn't do anything.
In a lot of games, I want to play like the honorable way and just really play this out and give it my all and just beat it fairly in the way that I do it. In Dark Souls, I don't care. If I can get through this game, I will take whatever dirty tactics I can get, as long as it's not like a game-breaking tactic. Like, I'm going to sit at this pedestal and its attacks can't hit me, so I'm going to pepper it. But, you know, I will abuse summons. I will use the items. I don't care. I just want to get through this fight. I killed Margit by a Kukri at a distance when my health bar was literally gone. It was like, whatever I got to do. But
so now, I know that there was kind of
paper cut things. if I need some experience and I'm in a, like a bit of a grind, or like I just want this thing dead, right, then sure. But you know,
right? Yeah, I know there was something that you kind of experienced that a lot of people are experiencing, and I'm experiencing, that I really want to go do, and that's, I mean, you talk to other people, you watch streamers, you watch YouTube videos, whatever. My God, the number of builds out there that I want to try.
It's so like bad. I have three files. Like, granted, two of them are only 10 minutes in, but I have three files, and I'm like, I want to play this Confessor and do a strength faith build. I want to play a bandit and just see what heavy arcane does.
I want to play I think I'm probably today going to start a second run, not a new game plus, but just a second run to do if ever I get kind of pissy at my intellect build. And I think I'm going to go either two-hand like colossal hammers or dual wield hammers, because I've seen that build with the hero, and it just looks so fun. It just looks like it's so much fun. But it's an entirely different play style, and I am kind of looking forward to that. There's just a lot of viability in this game, and the nice thing is they tend not to punish you with a whole lot of choice in the game overall. If you get to level 100, right, and you want to switch up your build entirely, you can do it. You can go it's called a larval tier. You go use the larval tier, and you respec all of your points, no cost.
Yeah, they had those in the past games, but they're pretty much like a limited amount. Like, there is X amount of this in this game. This is how many times you can do it.
Right. Yeah, they're limited here, but not terribly much. I mean, I think there's like maybe 12 in the game or something like that. Yeah. So they don't punish you there, which is really, really nice. If you get, you know, towards end game and you're like, ugh, this is just not like how I want to play anymore.
Or
like,
this build is not going to get through these bosses. Like, it's
right. Right. Then you can go change it. The only time that they really punish you is in your final weapon upgrades. I haven't even gotten there yet, but I do know that there's only for like magic weapons, so weapons that require the somber smithing stones to upgrade. There's only three of the last tier ones out there. So once you use them, that's it.
Oh, wow.
You can't say, okay, I want to upgrade this other weapon that's it. You've used all three. There's no more there.
Yeah, it's like Titanite slabs in like Dark Souls 1 really had a limited amount. It was easier in the later ones, but I can't remember the last time I fully max upgraded a weapon. I skip around quite a bit.
Yeah, and there is a lot of that. I mean, they at least give you the ability to do that until you make that choice. But it is like, once you've made that choice, you know, a couple of times, then it's like, okay, that's going to be your build. Unless you want to go with a subpar weapon into, you know, the final boss battles of the game. But at that point you should have like 60 or 70 hours of playtime under your belt. That's like the average, which is awesome.
It's just so like, much. And you said you're like level 80 or something like that, right?
I think I just turned it off at like 92,
which is absurd for Dark Souls games first playthrough. I mean, normally like 50 to 60s you're taking on like the last boss in previous ones. So the fact that you could hit that kind of numbers opens up so many possibilities that you can do in previous soul games. Like, you can get to those big weapons that require 50 some strength or whatever to wield. You can get to that point in a single playthrough, which is awesome that they do that.
I think that's the point. They didn't want you to like just shove all of your stats into one thing just so you can use this, but you have no health, mm-hmm. right? Or you have no endurance. no stamina. So it's, yeah, it's definitely like a very interesting thing that you're able to get to these like higher levels. But it still, I mean, it still poses a challenge. Like all of the bosses and everything at the higher levels are really, really tough. In like the two or one shot kind of territory.
I lost track of my train of thought. They've added a lot of weapons and stuff, but I hadn't like found hardly any.
Yeah, I mean, they're out there. Is yeah, there's like 13 or 15. I counted it the other day. Weapon types. Hold on, I can count it right now. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, 21, 22, 23, 24, 25, 26, 27. There's 27 different weapon types out there that you can use. And all of those types have like 14 different unique weapons under them.
Oh, God. Right?
And that's just the weapons. That does not include the Ashes of War, the sorceries and incantations, the shields, the armor. Like there's so much stuff. The talismans, which are the new rings. And that brings up a pretty good topic. Have you been trying or seen the Ashes of War stuff yet?
I think this is a fantastic addition to the game. It is wonderful because in a lot of past games, I would use a weapon and their weapon art and everything would be really cool, but I don't like the moveset. And now you got a really cool, you can get that weapon art, that Ashes of War, and stick it on whatever you want. And there's so many interesting combinations you can do. Like if your gameplay is typically, I don't like the parry, I don't get the timing right, I'm just going to whiff and take a sword in the face, you can take that straight off the shield and have your L2 be activate your right hand weapon art. Which is great because now I can have a shield and, I don't know, had the little quick step or a big swing or something like that. It makes your weapons so much more customizable to really suit whatever game style you want to do. There's so many different ones with different kinds of things. Like there's, I found the ones that allows your weapon art to be like a spell. One is that glintstone pebble. He literally just casts that. There's one that does this huge AoE wind thing around you like the bosses do. So if you get surrounded, you can burst people away from you. There's so much to these weapon arts, these Ashes of War. And it's so cool that they did that.
Right, yeah, absolutely. And within each Ash of War, you can apply like basically a damage type.
Yes.
Right, to your weapon, which is really great. You can they aren't all available on every Ash of War, but you can apply like magic damage to your weapon. You can apply apply lightning damage. You can apply bleed. You can apply faith or holy damage, and it's all really, really great for like kind of varying your build and varying what you do.
It also helps you with certain bosses. Like you go into a boss fight, you're like, oh, this guy seems more susceptible to bleed. I could stack more bleed on this. Or if this guy's resistant, I could take that bleed off. Which is great opposed to the past Souls games where you had to get particular items. And on certain points in its upgrade, that's when you branch it off and make it a magic weapon. And it's stuck like that unless you want to burn another item to take it off. And that's just difficult because you gotta find these items, you gotta farm some of this stuff, it undoes some work. This allows you just to customize your weapons constantly. I mean, the first, I have an Uchi Katana because I started with the samurai. It had a option with the Ashes of War to do a quality thing, which pretty much allows more scaling on stats but lowered the overall damage a bit. So later in the game, a quality build Ashes of War would be nice on it because it will do more damage based on my higher stats. You know, just there's so much you could do with it. It's absolutely absurd.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it's a really, really nice like almost masterstroke on just doing extra stuff. Now, I will say there are a couple of the Ashes of War which are being viewed as OP right now, and I tend to agree. But I think that that overall the Ashes of War are pretty fun. A few of those OP ones, just for reference, there's one that you can get almost 5 minutes into the game, called Hoarfrost Stomp.
Oh God.
Okay. And what Hoarfrost Stomp does is your character stomps the ground and then does two attacks of like frost spikes out of the ground. The first one does like a little interrupt, and then the second one just does damage. This applies frostbite.
Just immediately, not stacks it. It just straight up applies it.
So it applies.
That's absurd.
So what ends up happening is your first one that damages them, right, applies the frostbite, and then the second one, the second knock of it, hits and procs the frostbite. So you're seeing a lot of speedrunners use this because it's really, really good early on.
Oh, speedrunning this game it's going to be insane. I cannot wait to see what the speedrunners do.
Yeah. So they're doing that early on in the game. Another one is called let me try and find this thing. Bloodhound Step. Okay. Yeah. Bloodhound Step uses a little bit of FP, which, by the way, most of these do use FP. Yeah. Bloodhound Step uses a little bit of FP, and it temporarily makes the player invisible, and does a dodge with a humongous range on it. So you cannot get hit while you're invisible, and people are using this to basically just like dash around and backstab bosses. Basically the entire time.
Oh, right? Beautiful.
yeah, and that one's a little bit tougher to get early on, but you can still get it. Another one that's not available until later in the game, but is I can't wait till I kind of reach this finalized point of getting it, is called Ash of War Seppuku. And for those that don't know, Seppuku in Japan is basically like dying of dishonor. You shove a sword through yourself and it's the only way to kind of like honorably die at that point.
Please tell me it's like the old Tekken character Yojimbo, where he does that, where he stabs through himself to do a fake out and stab the opponent and does absurd damage.
Sort of. You definitely still stab through yourself. So what this one does is, instead of using FP, it uses a small portion of your health, and the portion is tiny, tiny, tiny. And from then on, you get more bleed and more bleed damage done from your weapon.
Oh, Oh God, I wish I remember what that sword is. It's from Bloodborne. There's a sword that you can activate its art to buff it, but you slowly lose health while it's buffed, and it deals a lot more blood damage.
Right, but this one's just a one-off, like tiny little sliver of your health. You chug a health pot, and then you're full again.
Oh God,
and you're fine. And it's been seen, like, basically, I've seen it tested on some dragons where, instead of like 7 or 8 hits to get the bleed up, it's taking more like 4 or 5, which is a massive improvement.
Whatever you can do to lessen the amount of hits. I've always liked bleed. I've done many bleed builds in the past. Bleed was a lot of fun in Dark Souls 3 when they had luck instead of arcane. Those are the same thing. And luck builds were always a lot of fun in Dark Souls 3. I always like messing with the luck, the bleeds and the poisons and stuff. Dark Souls 3 had very little frostbite. It looks like they're giving it a little bit more attention in this game. I've seen an arcane weapon that deals lightning and frost damage. So they're giving it a little bit more attention, which is good, because I always thought it was a really cool status to do.
Right. Right, absolutely. So something that I've actually found kind of disappointing about Dark Souls is, or not Dark Souls, Elden Ring.
We know what it is, Mitch.
Is even though there is just a crap ton of armor, because the bosses hit so hard, it's almost irrelevant what kind of armor you're wearing. So the bad thing here is it doesn't really matter to go out and get that super, super heavy armor, because it doesn't even do that much for your poise. Like, the boss just hit so hard, you're going to likely stagger anyway. Obviously, if you're doing PvP, it's a different story, but the good thing is it truly like emphasizes fashion souls, right? Like, there's so much that you can do to make your character look cool and stuff. But from a gameplay perspective, pure gameplay perspective, armor seems pretty.
You're still rocking some of your astrologer gear, aren't you?
Not anymore, but only because this other gear that I've got looks cooler. It does nothing. Seriously, it does nothing for me. Like, I'm still getting one hit by bosses and stuff. And I would suspect the same thing would happen even if I went up to like the heaviest armor and fat rolled all over the place.
So we've been going on for a while. We're an hour in. So yeah. I think this is a good point to wrap this one up. We've addressed a lot of the big stuff. Who knows? Maybe we do another one of these when I get a little bit more in. But this game, you were telling me the other night you're having nightmares about running out of FP and stamina.
yeah. It's so good. It has certainly, I mean, it had a lot of hype around it, right? I think the two most hyped games in recent history were Cyberpunk and Elden Ring. Cyberpunk did not really follow through on its promises or its hype. But Elden Ring is the polar opposite. It has just been wonderful to play. And honestly, I think that anybody who likes these kinds of games or likes the Souls series at all, this is certainly on the list of like top 10 games of all time, and certainly probably going to beat out most games for Game of the Year. I think its only competition is going to be God of War Ragnarok.
But I don't know. That new Pokemon game was announced. That Scarlet Violet. I mean, come on.
Yeah. When's the last time a Pokemon game got Game of the Year?
I know.
Pokemon Game of the Year.
Probably never.
Yeah, I'm looking. If I search.
It really does that. John would be like, well, there is a big, it's because of this and this. And, but.
Yeah.
We don't have John in this podcast.
It got. Right. It's Pokemon has gotten some awards, but it doesn't look like Pokemon has ever been Game of the Year. But anyway
this is definitely. I don't know how other games could beat it this year. Like this is absolutely absurd. The amount of stuff it is, in this game alone. I can't even. I could play through this game 10 times and I'll still find new stuff. I mean, it's absolutely absurd.
It's a great masterpiece of a game. They put a lot into it. I'm very happy with it.
All right, so I don't know where John is going to pepper this in with our normal rotation of things. He probably is just going to drop this somewhere. I will be discussing this game a bit more on our mini show coming up that we're going to be recording soon. That's one of our official pods. But briefly, because this exists, Mitch and I are doing this. I just wanted to give this a little bit more attention because I can make a whole separate show and do this once a week for a year, and I still won't address everything that this game's got going for it. There's a lot going on here. But next up will probably be the mini show, or this will post after the mini show. I don't know. Stay tuned for that stuff. Mitch, thank you for joining me today.
You're welcome. It's a pleasure.
Yeah. So, till next time.